Hello, everyone, and welcome to a new and improved episode of Constructive Criticism. I'm your host, Spencer, joined by my co-hosts, Casey, the Mad Tuna Bloodworth.
Hey, how's it going?
Dude, this week, my wife, who's sick, was like, hey, Spencer, do you make me a grilled cheese? And I was like, call Casey.
Well, shout out to her for not doing that.
I'm also joined by my co-host, Michael.
I also promised Casey not to call him to ask for a grilled cheese.
Thank you.
Why?
It would be a long drive. It would probably be a cold grilled cheese by the time I got there.
That's his worry with this whole grilled cheese thing, is in fact that somebody will hand him a cold grilled cheese and he'll have to taste it or else be dubbed a jerk.
That's among my concerns, yeah.
Well, welcome everybody. This week we're gonna obviously talk about the Pro Tour, so that's exciting. The Pro Tour was sweet. Before we get there, we want to talk about our sponsor at Oasis Games. You can check them out at oasisgamesslc.com. You can get 15% off of your first order. I'm sorry, I have to tell you, do not go to oasisgamesslc.com. I did this last week. Please go to mdgoasis.com or oasisccg.com. There's a problem with the OasisSLC.com if you're on your phone. If you're on the regular, if you're like on your laptop or your computer, it will work. It'll just redirect you, but it doesn't work on the mobile web. So just a problem. That's why the podcast, I also have to announce this. This is so unreal. Anti-shout out to Crystal Commerce. If you're trying to listen to the podcast through the Oasis Games feed, you cannot, because the website that Crystal runs for them for me to post articles and videos and things like that through does not exist.
I noticed that as well. I went to look today and I just kept getting redirected to the same page that wasn't a page with any content. It was interesting.
So I'm not sure why they aren't getting back to Alex, but I do apologize for anyone who has an inconvenience for that. Just go to constructedcriticism.com, click Oasis Games in the top right corner, and you can listen to the podcast there. Or I guess I don't know what to tell the people. I like how I'm telling people, if you can't listen to the podcast on Oasis Games, you can listen to it here. But they're like, I can't listen to it. That's awkward.
Yeah. We're also going to be going door to door and trying to spread the word. So
yeah. So, you know, if you get the chance and you see somebody say, hey, Constructive Criticism on ConstructiveCriticism.com, otherwise they could be confused.
It's a very intuitive website name.
Also, don't forget that you can support the show directly by going to patreon.com/ccmtg. Every month you can support us with any amount that you see fit, starting at $1, and we appreciate everything we can get. We're just outside of recording an extra podcast for you guys for that. We also talked about some benefits for the patron during our last podcast meeting. We're excited about the future of things like Google Hangouts and what we're going to do with them, and giving different things to the patrons of the show. And we appreciate you guys so much. So check it out at patreon.com/ccmtg. And there will be exclusive content there eventually. But don't forget that this show will always be free for you guys, because we appreciate you.
Yeah. And that content may or may not include a green screen.
So that's true. That could happen.
We could really be moving up in the world here.
A green screen.
Imagine the possibilities.
Exactly. You can do anything with a green screen. So there's that.
Yeah, you can record Star Wars Episode 1.
I mean, you can at least do anything worth doing.
And 300.
300 was also done on a green screen?
Yeah.
I thought you were saying Star Wars Episode 300 for a second. I was like, can you all live to see that, Casey? Can I dream?
Well, let's see. They've made 7 in about the last 40 years, so no.
But you know, technology will
get. Yeah. Technology might improve. They might make us live longer, or they might just start making a lot of really bad Star Wars.
Or really great.
Well, if they're making,
I wouldn't bet on it,
6 or 7 a year.
Your standards may have to drop a little bit if they're making 6 or 7 a year.
Game of Thrones makes 6 or 7 episodes a year. Or 10, right?
Yeah, 10.
Yeah, and those are great.
That's true.
There we go. Just turn Star Wars into Game of Thrones style. There we go. Now, we're done talking about Star Wars because I could talk about it all day. Don't forget, the point of this podcast is to hashtag always improve. What is hashtag always improving, Casey?
It is just a way to track your progress, your own growth, and it's a way for us to talk about the little things that we're doing to get better at Magic every week, because you never are done getting better at Magic or anything else.
Exactly. There's always something that you can be doing, right? So, Casey, how did you get better at Magic this week?
Just cutting loose and having fun and, you know, trying to play charades with you while you're pointing at things, and I don't understand why.
I mean, that would make me improve at life, too.
just having fun with Magic, cutting loose and not feeling like under a ton of pressure to play. You know, I played in my first Magic tournament in weeks, and I played Kiki Control just because it's sweet.
Because it is the sweetest.
Yeah.
If I didn't play Scapeshift, that's what I would play Modern.
Yeah, it is sweet. I wish it were good. Ancestral Visions was great. That card gets
that now?
Yeah.
Oh, I might have to switch it up.
Oh my goodness, that card was so good. It almost made up for how bad Wall of Lumens is.
Well, you have to expect, like, in a normal metagame, you probably have a lot of wild Nacatls out there, and then that card looks great.
I played against nothing but aggressive creature decks, and it was still the worst card in my deck by a lot.
Oh, interesting.
But aggressive creature decks like Eldrazi and Affinity.
What was it like to have fun playing Magic?
It was fun, actually. Yeah, thanks for asking.
It was Casey.
It was fun to have fun.
Yeah.
But did you feel like having that moment where, like, you maybe played a format that you don't care about as much and, like, got to play an event made you love Magic a little bit more again?
Yeah, exactly. It didn't feel like I had to be there. So it made me actually want to play Magic. So even after, like, the tournament didn't go that great because I was playing Wall of Omens, I actually wanted to play Magic when it was over.
I sense a theme to this week's podcast from Casey.
I'm going to be bitter about it for a while. But I did, you know, actually want to go and play Magic after the event instead of just kind of, like, being relieved when I was done.
That's a great feeling. And I think that even just the you know, that couple-week break might have done that by itself.
Yeah.
But, man, I'm glad that you're having fun again.
Me too.
Michael, how did you improve at Magic this... Oh, sorry. State champion Michael Hinderocker. How did you improve at Magic this week? Oh, wait. Did you win states?
I did.
So, I want to be clear. We have an agreement about that medal, right?
Do I have to now wear it while we podcast?
No. The other
all the time. Okay. You have to wear it all
right.
the time.
This is our official agreement. If you go 0-2 drop at a PPTQ, you must show up the next PPTQ you play
wearing the
state champion medal.
You
should preferably wear sunglasses while you play as well.
Oh, yeah. And
slick back your hair. So,
for those who don't know, we had an agreement among a lot of us that we were all going to go to states, and that way, if one of us wins it, we can win the medal. Because the medals, that's a weird thing.
Yeah. Like, it is weird.
Like, a trophy would be cool, a plaque.
All these things I have to hide so my girlfriend has less opportunities to make fun of me for spending large amounts of my time playing Magic.
Yeah.
But, like, a medal? That...
like, are you going to, like,
man,
what percentage of
next
medal...
Next time I go out to a nice dinner, I'm wearing that.
Yeah. Say, what percentage of state championship medal recipients actually have worn their medal?
Outside of the picture they force you to take?
Yes.
0%.
Mike Callahan has done it. But nothing against SCG. Like, and some people probably really think it's cool, like, to have, I mean, yeah. I would want, and I love my plaque, right? Like, I have it hanging on every video you see on constructorcriticism.com. There's a plaque behind us.
It'd be nice if it were a cup, even a small one, just something you could drink out of, right?
If it were
to a toast.
Didn't Tom Martell say that was bad?
I would be stoked. If it were a brass mug that said Utah State standard champion, I would be so stoked.
Even a ceramic mug, right? World's best state Magic player.
A set of crystal that all set state champion on it.
How about some cufflinks?
Yeah.
Yeah, practical items.
That
exactly.
That would be sweet.
Yeah, exactly.
But yeah, congratulations, first of all.
Thank you.
But that being said, how did you improve at Magic this week?
I played tight in matches that were important to me. I played well enough to take advantage of the good luck that I did have. Mainly, I felt like I stopped making excuses for myself in events where I was already doing well. I feel like in the past, I've been willing to overlook my own errors when they come late in events. You know, oh, well, I made it to the top four, so at least it was a pretty good day. But I notice as I play more and more, that stuff really sticks with me, and it really bothers me looking back, knowing that maybe I should have been able to win a match, but because I punted or just made a poor choice, I didn't get there. So it was really great for me this week to feel like I didn't let the deck down. Magic is a game where you rely enough on variance that even when you're playing well, your success isn't linear. You're not always going to do better than you did last time, and you have to really take advantage of every chance you have. You can't just say, oh, well, I top four this time. I'll win one eventually. I mean, there are a finite number of events. I mean, especially with PPTQs, there are a finite number of events in every season. And if your attitude is just kind of loosey-goosey about winning, it's hard. You don't get back there every time.
Yeah. I mean, I agree. When pre-TQs were new, I don't know if you remember, Spencer, but like I was top eighting him like crazy.
Yeah.
Like, and it was, you know, I was better than I am now back then. And players in general were a little bit worse because there weren't as many competitive REL events.
Yeah, players have gotten so much better from this.
But it's true. But I was just like top eighting him like crazy. And I just didn't like, I feel like I was just kind of like on autopilot the first half of the day. And then the top eight would start. And then that's when I had to start playing Magic. But like, I didn't take it seriously enough because I was like, I'll top eight the next one. And I'll top eight, you know, the two after that, whatever. I'll win one eventually. And it just never happened. But I top eighted a bunch of them because I was just sort of satisfied with making it to the top eight for the most part. That like I was making more than my entry fee and prizes, so like I wasn't losing money playing in the events, and I was playing Magic and I was having fun, and that was that. So, but like staying hungry even when like you are having success, I think is a good lesson to learn.
And it's hard to do. I mean, it's not easy to really. It's not always easy to really remain competitive when you are already doing pretty well. I mean, when you do make top eight of a PPTQ, there's nothing wrong with being happy that you made top eight. I mean, that is, for a lot of us,
it's kind of an arbitrary achievement, right?
But it's a good marker that you've played good Magic that day and you've given yourself a chance now to actually win the event. I think the trick is just there's a difference between being happy that you've made it that far and being satisfied with making it that far. Every time I make top eight, I'm very pleased with myself. It makes me smile, but you know, then I take 30 seconds and we sit down and start playing and I just want to win again.
You know, the PPDQ 2 weeks ago, it was not really my attitude going into it. I didn't care about making the top eight. I wasn't happy that I top eighted. I mean, we talked about this a little bit internally, but like, this podcast is going to take a weird turn. I'd rather 0-2 drop than lose in the finals of a PPTQ because I value my time so much. Now, at the same time, I'd rather win every match of Magic that I can. So it's a balancing act. It's hard to think about for me. We'll kind of move on a little bit. My always improving moment kind of changed today than what I wrote down because I write the shows on Thursdays and I include some of my stuff in there at that time. But today is actually the 1 year anniversary of me qualifying for the Pro Tour for the first time. And I don't know. I feel like I wasted a year of Magic just not caring enough, being content with going to the Pro Tour, day two-ing my first Pro Tour, 3-0-ing my first Pro Tour draft, and feeling content that I knew that I could do those things. So what's my next step? Like, what do I care about? And I still don't know. I still want to go back and crush PV, like I said last week. But I don't know. I'm making a lot of stupid mistakes lately in Magic, and I don't know how to fix them without... I mean, like, a year ago, I was playing really good Magic. I was playing tight. I wasn't making as many misplays, and now I still play a lot of Magic and still make them. So I'm not sure that I have an always improving moment other than realizing that I have let myself get this way. And so that's something that I need to fix if I want to be good at Magic again.
I've kind of felt at times that, at least for me, I went through a stage where I didn't think I was good at Magic.
Yesterday.
And now okay. You have a medal to remind
you.
Well,
now I have a medal, so anytime I'm feeling down, I'll just hang it over my head and go sit in the shower.
What? But
if I'm feeling like I need to cry, I'll put on the medal first to remind myself that at least once I won something.
Okay.
No, but I mean, I think I went through a period where I didn't think I was very good, and then being invited to play and test with you guys made me press for a while, feeling like I had to sort of prove to myself and to people who maybe believed in me more than I did that I was at least reasonably good at playing Magic. And I think just kind of letting go of that, where you're sort of trying too hard.
You're saying the reason you keep beating me is because I invited you to test with me?
I mean, obviously.
All right, you can get off the team. My bane right now.
But I think you have to find the balance between not caring and trying too hard. Because when you try too hard and you care too much about your finishes, as opposed to just playing the best you can and enjoying yourself, I don't think that's healthy either.
I don't know. I think that... I don't think that I left that PPTQ, like, angry. I think it was, like, this... I think it was the second place finish that, like, didn't bother me as much. And that's what I mean by... I had this want to win really good. Like, this want that I hadn't had in a while and, like, was really excited to play Magic again. But I didn't care... Well, first of all, I couldn't go to the RPTQ, right?
Sure.
And my favorite part about Magic is travel. So that was a huge problem. But at the same time, like, what have I done the last year? So, like, 2 weeks after I qualified for the Pro Tour, I won a PPTQ. And then I went to an RPTQ after not playing an entire season. I then skipped the next season. So I skipped two seasons after qualifying for a Pro Tour. And it's just weird. It's weird that this is... Like, I literally played in, what, like, six events? And then, so, I played in 11 competitive REL events outside of a Pro Tour and an RPTQ in 1 year. That's so weird for me. Like, when I look back on it, it doesn't even make sense. And I don't know why. I don't know why I decided to do, like... Squander. How many competitive REL events did you and Austin combine play in last season?
Far too many, given our general lack of success.
But like, for real, was it 24?
At least.
Like,
God, it might have been 24 for me alone.
No, it wasn't that many.
It felt like it. Felt like about 100,000. I was going through a real cold streak for a while, and Magic kind of sucks when you can't stop losing.
It does. But what my really point does. Is like, what's your goal, right?
So I
don't want to be aimless anymore.
I think part of this is like I had this a little bit. I think some of this was being sort of hung over from the RPTQ that I played in because I had this sort of experience too where I won a PPTQ at the end of November and not that long after that, you guys asked me if I wanted to test with you and I felt like things were like really moving forward for me. Like I was improving quickly and kind of everything was like working out and coming together and then going to an RPTQ and doing, I didn't do horribly, but I didn't do well. And just generally being unhappy with like my choices in deck selection leading up to it and including the RPTQ, it was just hard for me to like get back into things again. And I can't help but wonder if coming off a Pro Tour and basically realizing that you've played in a Pro Tour, but at the end of it, you're basically in the same spot you were before you'd ever qualified, except that you've now done it once. But just realizing, okay, now I need to do that again. It's just daunting.
I didn't have that feeling.
But I think that's why, like saying, okay, that was really hard to qualify before, and now I'm back at square one.
3 years of my life gone.
Right, now I'm back at square one, right? I mean, I qualified for a Pro Tour, and it was great, and you did well. But, you know, I mean, unless you go, what, 11-5 and are invited back for the next one... You're right back on that grind again, and it's hard
true.
To just, like,
and I think
get
that,
off the Pro Tour and go to a PPTQ.
And also, you kind of met your heroes, right? Like, you spent, like, years of your life trying to get to this point of playing on the Pro Tour. Like, you went to sleep thinking about the Pro Tour, woke up thinking about the Pro Tour a lot of days, and you got there, and then it was like, well...
It was the exact same as day two of a GP.
Yeah, it was like, now what?
Well, yeah. Right, you get there, and it's basically like, okay, well, unless you win or, you know, really, really make such a big splash that this is, like, now can be a lifestyle for you... You basically realize nothing changes. Now I'm back to trying to qualify again.
You guys are making me depressed.
No, and hopefully I can do better that time. And I mean, but that's just the way things are. Like, if
so, how do I, man, this is going to be a journey because I have to figure out how to get over it. I have to, because I love Magic. I love, this is probably the part of Magic I love the most now. I love making content, but you can't make the people listening, like, I'm eternally grateful. I've met some of the greatest people I know through this game and through doing stuff like this. But if I want the success that some of my heroes have, the people that I talk to on a regular basis, like KYT and Marshall, you know, how do I make that happen? And, you know, Quentin believed when he was on the show that it was through us qualifying for Pro Tours. and winning at events. And I don't think that's, I don't know.
I think there are multiple paths. I think the most clear path, the path that involves the least amount of kind of bizarre events and good luck, oddly, is participating in and winning at Pro Tours. Because if people see you winning, you figured something out that not everyone has. Well,
and it gives credibility, right?
Exactly. I mean, if I want to listen to what you have to say, it makes sense that I would if you've...
Well, why did you listen to what I had to say before you joined the show?
Because you're a better player than I am?
I don't think that's true.
Well, that's flattering.
But I think, like, there's... As far as us as a show...
I appreciate that, Michael. I'm sorry if I downplayed that.
100%. No, I really think that it's very easy to listen to people you think are better than you, or at least, like, around the same level as you and have interesting ideas.
But, yeah.
You know, if you know someone is, like, dramatically worse than you, it's hard to take what they have to say seriously, right?
Sure.
I mean, just, like... If you're a 5-star chef or whatever, you're not going to, like, go take advice from a...
Fry cook?
Yeah. Well, I mean, you could, but...
We've delved really deep into this and probably got more personal than we've gotten on this podcast in a long time. You know, we don't have a lot of segments on this show, so I let this go a little bit longer. But I hope that I can figure out a path for me in Magic. Because for the little while, I wanted it to be to help others qualify for RPTQs and go to the Pro Tour. And with things that are happening in my personal life, I'm thinking, I literally feel like I wasted a year as I'm facing things that might make it so that I might not be able to play as much Magic. And it's like, dude, I played in 11 events last year.
It's less than one a month, and now you're like, I'm never going to be able to play in one again.
Yeah. So it's
you just have to let that fuel you when you do have the chance to play. Just understand that
what
every
I'm saying
event
is,
is important.
I took for granted the leeway I was given when my wife said, I don't know what I was doing, but I hope that I can find a path and that I can always improve even more than I was. I hope that in 3 years I'll be draft master of the Pro Tour and go to Worlds. Like, that would be really cool.
Yeah.
I wouldn't take that too, for what it's worth. Yeah. I'm assuming Casey wouldn't object either.
No, I would happily take it.
But no, like, what's my next goal? There's things going on in the Pro Tour scene that we won't talk about. This is a podcast, but what's my next goal? Like, what do I want to do? And I hope that I can find that. Don't forget that every week on the show that you can participate as a patron of the show. I did not post to the patreon.com/ccmtg this week because of we have so much to talk about, but. You know, in the future, every week I'll post something. You can post on it. You're always improving moment, and we'd be happy to talk about it and share it with the listeners. Like, we care what you guys are doing too. So, all right, no power rings this week. Instead, I'm just going to give you guys some data, and then we're going to talk about it for just a minute. Okay. So the decks that had 6+ wins at the PT, and these are the number of these decks. So there were 3 Esper Dragons decks that had 6+ wins, 4 black green control. 6 Jund Midrange, 7 Black Green Aristocrats, 8 Green White Tokens, 16 Green Red Ramp, 18 Humans decks, and 18 Bant Company decks.
Just straight skipped over Esper Control.
Yeah, I don't care about that. Five.
Shout out to Austin.
Shout out to Austin.
That's actually pretty impressive, because that's really like 8 Esper decks, right?
Yeah,
you combine the two.
When you look at the players playing those decks,
sure, yeah.
like
they're the best ones in the world. But
was anyone
Shota, Seth Manfield?
Can I just say, was anyone surprised that Shota top-8ed with Esper Dragons?
No,
I mean,
and PV said that he wished he had played the Green White Tokens deck, but he also said he was only like 4 cards off from Shota's list.
Well, I think the difference is that the deck that PV audibled off was like the deck with the best win percentage for the entire Pro Tour. So it sort of makes sense to me that he would regret not playing the team deck when the team deck was the deck. But, I mean, that doesn't necessarily mean that he thinks Esper was a bad choice, just that Shota doing well with a deck is... It's sort of like PV doing well with a deck. It doesn't say that much about the deck.
Can we be clear here? There's 9 decks that had... So I didn't include any. There was multiple decks with 2. There was a lot of them.
Yeah, sure.
So I cut it off at 3. And I could have cut it off at 4 and just included all Esper decks at 8. But I thought that Black Green Control with the top 8 like should be talked about, and Esper Dragons with the top 8 should be talked about. That Goggles deck seemed... I don't actually know that it was that good, so I didn't really include it in this. But man, that's a lot of decks. This was the best Pro Tour I've watched in a very long time. Yeah. By a huge margin.
Yeah, I mean, it's super interesting in terms of just all of the different ways you could... And they're not, like, slightly different decks.
This feels like Innistrad, dude.
No, they are wildly different. There are a lot of them. There's something for everyone. And getting to watch the feature matches, too.
There were
I was getting so spoiled. It's like every round you're watching, like, Finkel, LSV, Shota. You're watching, like... I mean, Brad Nelson, some of the greatest players in the world playing almost anything you could
possibly
imagine.
Brad Nelson might have locked up Hall of Fame.
I mean, he was certainly crushing with that deck.
And
that deck
was sweet. Top eight?
Third top eight and a world's top eight.
Yeah.
And a player of the year. Like, I mean...
It's pretty close.
And yeah, more importantly, close. It seemed like he figured out a team that works for him, right?
He could do it next week.
I was going to say, right?
Yeah. Like, this Pro Tour, there was two flavors of company, three flavors of humans, two flavors of ramp. Well, more than two, but the other one was like monogreen. I don't know. there was, you know, multiple flavors of Jund midrange, multiple flavors of Esper control with Esper dragons in it. Like, this format is amazing.
And if you jump down to decks that had less copies, so maybe were less sort of broadly archetypical, but still had someone think they were good enough to play, there are a lot of decks that did reasonably well.
People made deep runs with all kinds of stuff.
I saw a few things, a few like Sultai variants, just all kinds of stuff. I mean, it really seems like if you go through that list of decks and you can't find one you like, I don't know what to tell
you. Don't love Magic.
It's a you problem, not a deck problem.
Yes, there are so many things you can play.
It was right before States. So it was before, it was day one of the Pro Tour, right after it. When did I call you? It might have been before that.
It was Friday evening sometime. Maybe day one was over. Maybe it was, no, I guess it was over because it was evening.
Yeah.
And it was,
and I said, Casey, this is going to go down as the best standard format ever. And it went down as my favorite Pro Tour ever.
Yeah, it was sweet. That conversation as a whole was really funny, but I can't repeat everything you said on a podcast.
I am in love. Let's get right into this for this Pro Tour special episode. What was the card that most impressed you from Shadows of Innistrad? For me, it might not have been from the Pro Tour. Actually, might have been in my match against Michael. It states, but by the way, Michael beat me again. So there are people keeping tally. Michael now has more wins over me than the rest of my co-hosts, literally combined, every single one of them, except Kyle Febble might have beat me a couple times. I don't know, but he's got like 5 wins over me or something. So
I've beaten you a few times. We've played a bunch at regular RL, but we've only played, I think, one time at competitive RL.
Well, the secret is play more Collected Company.
The secret is actually just play more matches against me, I think.
Yeah.
I think I've only played Quentin a few times too, but he now, I believe, has everyone beaten together. And it's just not even fun anymore. but in that match, I'm pretty sure if you had I actually think if you had never drawn a Cryptolith right, would have never beaten me. Not one game.
Probably not. That card is sort of weird. It's like very...
It's
very bipolar, right? When it's great, it feels like really unfair. It's like Earthcraft almost. And when it's not great, it just does nothing.
I don't know, because it was great against me both times. But the thing that I noticed is there are cards that are good when you're ahead, right? This card is not good when you're ahead. This card is, I'm now winning this game. You actually don't have a chance.
Sure, yeah.
Kind of like the way Nykthos felt.
Yeah, where it really just puts it over the top.
It's like, okay, you were ahead. This is now unfair. That's kind of how that card felt. I haven't had that feeling since, you know, for a year with a card. I was super impressed with that. Michael, you have Westvale Abbey down. This is the card that Cryptolith Rite made me think was broken. But that made me think Cryptolith Rite was broken.
So I was really impressed watching pros play with Westvale Abbey, because Westvale Abbey isn't a card that's had a lot of success in this standard format to this point, like at SCG Opens. But watching pros play with it and people who just like actually understand how to play good Magic really inspired me to play a Westvale Abbey deck this weekend, because if you're playing it in decks that are built to take advantage of it and can sort of use it to almost to put pressure on an opponent from multiple different angles, it's just brutal to play against. The deck building cost to playing it is almost zero, as it showed up in both green-white tokens and in the green-black Aristocrats deck.
And other decks.
But those two I felt used it most effectively, where they could just put the opponent in positions where almost no matter what they did, they were either going to get killed by a bunch of little things or by a 9/7. And it was just sort of, you can choose how you want to die, but you're dying.
Yeah.
And it's a land.
Yeah, you're going out, but yeah, it is interesting. It did give the deck sort of a, well, you messed up, you tapped out, like almost like you were playing a combo deck.
Yeah. Casey, what about you? What card impressed you most?
I'd have to say Seasons Past. Just
holy
because,
crap.
It's because that card looked unplayable.
If we're talking about cards that went from bad to, oh, okay, this is actually dumb. That card went from like zero to, is this like one of the four or five best cards in Standard?
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah, it went from, I wouldn't play
that
in most draft
decks. You guys
realize
they were only playing two?
Well, and four Dark Petition. So.
Right, but like,
combo deck. Combo deck, yeah.
Oh my gosh. Quentin bought that deck on Modo. We both bought decks on Modo so that we had, because we share cards. We now have, both of our two favorite decks are built on Modo. I'm so excited to play Modo now. I'm going to play Modo right now. You guys want to finish this podcast? I'm going to go play Green Black Control.
Yeah, but that card is powerful. It doesn't, if you read the card, it's like, this is like a 6-mana sorcery, 6-mana die, 6-mana lose the game. Why would you ever cast that? But then somehow would
you want to play a green deck?
I mean, I don't know that I would actually play this deck, but I think it's sweet.
Okay.
So eventually.
Yeah, I mean, I'm sure I'll play it once.
It's not priority one, but it's going to happen.
I think it's the next deck that I'm going to play. I don't even care if it's good next week. Like, like what?
6-mana draw 7 spells is strong.
That's the thing. That's the thing that impressed me the most. It was not 6-mana draw 4. It was draw 4 cards that you've already wanted to cast throughout this game. Or 5. Or 6. What? What? Why?
Yeah, I mean, and then somehow, by like late game, it's like Demonic Tutor 6 times, and that feels powerful.
It just doesn't seem like a thing a Magic card should do.
It was so cool.
Like, and the whole Demonic, sorry, not Demonic Pact, I'm mixing up Pro Tour decks here. The
Dark
whole
Petition.
Dark Petition thing, just, it seems sort of obvious once you'd seen it happen, but the first time I saw that happen and figured out what was going on, I was just sitting there with my jaw on the floor like,
yeah.
Oh my God, why is this something you're allowed to do? It's like if someone's trying to grind you out of it, it's just not going to happen.
Yeah. Well, and it's interesting because Seasons Past had that put it on the bottom of your deck thing, which obviously means that it was too good in testing without that, right? You don't just like start with that kind of line of text on a card.
Sure.
So it should have been obvious that there was something to that card, but it was not obvious. And then, like, Dark Petition, yeah, was really the key that unlocked that whole thing, which isn't, like...
The fact that it probably made it better, because it not only means that you can get Seasons Past out of your deck, it means you have to run less Seasons Past, because you can go grab it when you need it.
Right.
You don't have to, you get to.
Sure.
Yeah, and it occupies the 5 slot, which, like, you don't have a ton of 5s you'd want to be playing, so, like, it's nice with Seasons Past. Yeah, it was just, like... Synergies on synergies.
No, that deck was so cool. That was a deck where, like, watching that, if that didn't, I don't know, make you feel a little tingly, we like different styles of Magic, I guess, but that deck is sweet.
It was very political. Welcome to your third episode.
I don't know. I don't want to say anything too bad. Like, I mean, maybe you just don't like good Magic cards. I don't know. You don't like drawing 7 spells for 6 mana.
I do. I want to do it. So yeah, I agree with everything that's been said. Like what a sweet card. Did this PT surprise you? Was something from the SEG results that you expected to see play at the PT? My answer is just no. We had a little bit of differing opinions on our testing team. I thought that this PT would completely change the format, and Austin thought that there would be very small, minute changes to the format. I literally said I expect. I told Quentin, I told multiple people, I said, Pantheon is going to bring a 2-color control deck to this Pro Tour, and it's going to change the format. It's going to do well. And then from just my initial testing, I knew that Bant Company was beatable. I knew that you could beat humans and Bant Company if you wanted to. And if I can do it, the best players in the world can do it. So I knew that the format was going to be sweet. Like, I didn't know it was going to be this sweet, but I knew that it would not be... I knew that if you wanted to beat both, you could. And that was half the battle. It's probably more than that. I mean, it was... Way more than
that. It was the whole battle. It was all of
your results. It was like 19 out of 32 was just Bant Company, right? I mean, it was like two-thirds of the battle for one of those decks.
Right. So, you know, I was not surprised. There was no surprises here, and I'm really proud of Pantheon for proving me right, and that deck is so cool.
It is cool. I'm not 100% convinced that it's, like, good all the time. Because, like, sometimes decks that John Finkel played
70% of the time, it works all the time.
Yeah, maybe. But it was
a deck
sweet.
I want to be good? Yeah. Yes.
It's majestic. That's what it is.
They found a unicorn, dude.
Yeah. Apparently,
I was watching Revelations.
Well, I was watching coverage, and LSV was saying that Matt Nass found the same shell, but couldn't build a version of it that was actually good, but found the Dark Petition Seasons Past combo, and they tried a bunch of shells with that and didn't think it was good, so we're really surprised when someone else showed up with the same deck and it was sweet.
Yeah, you hear about that a lot, where they're like, oh, I can't believe that we were missing this little thing. Sure. Yeah.
I mean, it's crazy. I think that when you get a bunch of good players together of good skill level, right? I mean, you and Matt found blue-white humans, Michael, and Quentin, myself, and Gage back... You know, in 2012, found Jun Midrange.
I was gonna say let's not equate blue white humans to Seasons Past.
No, I'm just saying like
that deck is a lot sweeter than anything I've ever come up with in my entire life.
What? When you get a bunch of people in a room together, when you have, I mean, a lot of these people function the same way we do. It's getting in a Facebook group with 9 of your friends and like, this is what I found, what do you think of this, what do you think of this, and it works. The hive is so much stronger, and you're not surprised to hear things like, oh, we had the colorless Eldrazi deck but we didn't have Chalice of the Void.
Yeah, or we had mono blue but we didn't have Frostburn Weird, so we were short of 2-drop.
Right.
It's
so easy. We had mono blue. We had mono blue devotion for that pro tour for Alex.
And it just.
And he didn't play it because I told him he could not play Judges Familiar. Or not Judges Familiar.
Cloudfin Raptor.
I told him he could not play Cloudfin Raptor, and I stand by that decision. But, you know, I think that when you see stuff like that, like when you see these pros that are so close to each other, I mean, you guys, you both of you on this section, you guys put deck diversity. You guys were surprised by the number of decks.
Yeah, I mean, it's almost never 8 in the top 8, right? Like, I don't know that I've, like, ever seen a tournament where that happened.
I think that 7 of those 8 decks were actually great.
Well, I was impressed by...
Which one's not? Oh, the red-white?
I don't think that you can justify playing red-white over green-red. I don't think you can. I think that one of them's better than the other. But I think that... Like, the other 7 decks, I actually believe are all good. I even think Esper Dragons is great.
Yeah, it's... I mean, it's not like it suddenly got worse, right? Like, it's all the exact same cards that it always was.
I mean, except Dig Through Time. But
so what about that?
Dig Through Time.
You can play Dragon Lord's Prerogative. It's like the same thing.
I was going to say, I don't know that the replacement value of Dig Through Time is as high in Standard as it might have been in Legacy or Modern. But,
no, that's true.
I think that Casey's right. I think that there's so much diversity, and you had the same feeling, but man, is that just not the greatest?
It wasn't just that people were able to find a deck that beat Bant Company and Humans. It was more that people were able to find all kinds of decks that had interesting matchups with each other, and some of them, you know, it wasn't like Bant Company and Humans didn't do well. They still put up reasonable results because they're good decks. I was just impressed by the fact that, you know, all of a sudden I went from having like 2 or 3 decks I felt like I could play to like 15. You know, it's like there are like 15 decks that I would be super happy to sleeve up tomorrow, and that's not a place I think I've ever been.
Is the feeling I got when I could play 5 color control, Farseek, Ranger's Path, Store to Nothingness, Sweetness. Like this
deck
format
was so bad.
That deck went. I went undefeated with that deck in a Utah Invitational. That deck was sweet.
I don't know what to tell you. I played it. People loved playing that deck, and it was just a disaster.
I only played it at one event, and I was the one of the greatest things that ever happened to me.
So it was a good time to hang it up after one event.
I mean, it was unplayable after that event.
It was unplayable before that event, but people just had no idea what you were doing.
Dude.
So they were just dead.
No, everyone was playing like these mid-range decks, and you were like, Ranger's Path, and they were like, oh, I'm dead.
Yeah, we've all been far-seeked into Ranger's Path, into what just happened to me.
Is it bad that I literally don't know what Ranger's Path is?
It's double far-seek. Forests.
Oh, okay.
So you grabbed, and this deck played Gristlebrand, Thragtusk, Huntmaster of the Fells, Rakdos's Return, and Sphinx's Revelation.
And Door to Nothingness.
And it was the sweetest thing I've ever played.
That sounds awesome.
Were you playing Worldfire?
No, that was Alex. He won the event with the World Thrag Fire deck. He played it to beat us, because there were five of us playing it at this event. You played it, didn't you?
I don't think so.
I think you did.
I've never played that deck.
You, me, Quentin, Gage all played it.
I played Flash at that event.
Okay. Well, you done goofed.
Apparently.
No, I think that like that's how sweet this format is like, somebody's going to find sweet things like this. I'm excited. I'm excited for the future. Is there a deck that you expected the pre-T? There a deck or a card that you expected at the PT that you did not see? I expected more Arlan Court. I mean, there were some, but I expected more. It was worse in my testing than I thought it would be, but it was better than people said it was. Some people were playing it. It was fine, but I would expect more of it in the future. Casey, Reality Smasher.
Yeah, just Eldrazi decks at large. People, like, I expected Mono Red or Eldrazi, or specifically Mono Red Eldrazi, to kind of be around as like an aggro deck that really is asking the hard questions. And it just wasn't really around, and it may be just the mid-range year decks or just have too much going on. I'm not sure.
Michael, you have a thought on that before I move on?
So I was talking about this a little bit earlier, just with Spencer and Casey, and I thought that maybe, like, especially with Red Eldrazi, I think some of the success, at least that I experienced personally playing around with it, was I was really surprised at how good Force Chandra was. And as people have sort of accepted Chandra as a card you can easily play three or four of, I think maybe the Eldrazi deck loses some of its appeal because it's sort of a weird deck to play Force Chandra in, honestly, except that in Mono Red there just aren't any other cards to play, so you sort of get stuck with it. But finding that you can just feel good about playing three or four Chandra in a deck, I think opens up a lot of new possibilities.
I think that's why when I said that I thought seven of the eight decks were great in the top eight, I think that like you're just worse off playing this style of deck over something like green red. And I mean that's not terrible. Like the Goggles deck that Luis played was super sweet. But I think that
this really ends up basically being Mono Red plus two Eldrazi Displacers, at least in the main deck, right?
Right.
And you can play a full other color for basically no cost. So unless you think Eldrazi Displacer,
I mean, it's
is
not really
than...
that, right? Because like it's red plus colorless.
Well, right, but you can play red green plus colorless, no problem.
Yeah, I mean, there's...
I think you could easily build a deck that could play all the Goggles stuff, some of the green ramp stuff, and Thought Not Seer if you wanted it.
You can. I've done it. But the thing is like... That's my point, is what's the point in doing this over something else?
Sure. And I think that some of that is just that when you haven't seen deck lists already, but you're sort of constructing from scratch and your testing gets a little bit inbred. You know, like, if you just had access to all the Pro Tour decks, but you didn't know how they were going to finish, maybe people would play different things for the Pro Tour. But given that you have to come up with everything, right, not everyone is going to settle on the same version of similar decks.
Sure. Michael, you have a very surprising one, because... I don't understand. Last week you said that you didn't think black-white was good, and then this week you're surprised that there's not more black-white at the Pro Tour.
Well, I don't think it's very good. I was surprised that it basically saw zero play. Not only that it didn't have success, but that like almost no one in general played it. It just surprised me a little, given that like 2 weeks ago, you know, we were seeing white-black Eldrazi as the choice of a bunch of guys who I consider to be very good Magic player. You know, all those Star City guys played white black Eldrazi and mostly did pretty well with it. So it just surprised me to see a deck fall from grace so quickly.
That makes sense.
Surprised at all? I mean, I get what you're saying. I do think that the deck, the white black mid range deck looked reasonable. The white black Eldrazi deck looked kind
of
bad.
But I mean, I'm saying this as any white black deck. I mean, I don't think really anyone played white black of any variety at the Pro Tour essentially. So, I mean, maybe just in doing more advanced testing and doing more
When Seth Manfield was winning with Soren and he had three other Planeswalkers in play, I was terrified of getting... Did you see Soren win that game? Like, did you see the other three Planeswalkers he had to play first?
It did kill one of Luis Salvado's Chandras. I mean...
Why are you contributing?
It seemed good.
This is the hill I've chosen to die on. It's 100%.
I don't know
if Lindala would have been better or worse in any of those situations.
I have no idea. Nor do I.
Might have been the exact same outcome.
I don't know. I can't get behind playing Sphinx of the Final Word, so I think I'd play Lindala just so that I never had to play Sphinx. That just seems, man, I don't know. I can't believe you're surprised by this.
I actually think that the deck is bad.
I think it may well be. It surprised me to see people just drop something that had been at least reasonably successful so quickly.
No, here's the thing: I think that decks like that draw good players to it, and that's great. I think that a lot of the win percentages of things like this and like Black Red Dragons come from the fact that a lot of those players are just better than their opponents.
It's very true. I mean, Tom Ross was one of the people who like really drove the success of Black Red Dragons, right? Because he's winning with a monster. Right. And when he's on, he's on. Like, he is a tough out. He's
successful with whatever he plays, basically. Yeah. There are some guys where it's kind of like Finkel. I don't put too much stock in what he's playing because you could probably give him, like, I don't know, a cardboard box and a chewed piece of gum and he'd somehow be in the Pro Tour top 8 and we'd be really confused about it, but there he'd be.
Did you know that PV hates that joke?
What joke?
The ham sandwich joke?
The ham sandwich. He hates it.
It's stupid, but...
All I'm saying is, compared to... I think if you give John Finkel a deck that... He is so much better than the average player, even at the Pro Tour level, that he's one of the few people in the world who
beat
can,
him.
Like... outskill opponents in Pro Tour matches. It's disconcerting. Honestly, watching it, it's disconcerting.
My next goal in Magic is to beat John Finkel. So I have to go to any GP where Storm is legal.
All right, catch him. you might have to just catch him coming out of work and just kick him in the shin a couple of times. That's by far the easiest way to beat up John Finkel.
No, we had a great
talk.
He
wants to be him, not beat him.
No, beat him.
I thought you said be him.
Beat him. I want to beat John Finkel. John Finkel is one of the nicest guys I've ever met.
I'm going to beat him real good at cribbage. It's going down.
What? He's at swimming, Casey. I want to beat him at swimming.
He's pretty lean. I don't know. I would. I feel like there's arenas you could beat him in. I think you just have to refocus your efforts. Yeah, exactly. I bet he's not very good at that. Seems kind of neurotic. Like, I don't know that he's played a lot of Thumb Wars.
I mean, in a hair on my head contest, I like my chances.
That's true.
That was rude.
I'm trying to think of ways I could beat John Finkel, blow. And not much is coming to mind. That's about it.
No, I want to beat John Finkel at Magic.
Give me a run for my money.
Okay, all right.
I want to beat John Finkel at Magic. I don't think that's an unreasonable goal to set for yourself as a lifetime goal.
No, it's just about playing the tournaments that he plays in, right?
Right. And I have to play every tournament. Yeah, no, it's every tournament where Storm is legal and Pro Tours.
I think that GP Portland was the last GP he played in.
No. That was the last tournament that Storm was legal, to be fair.
No, he played GP Oakland in January.
Yeah,
I saw
any limited GP that he's allowed to play in, he'll play.
No, he played a standard GP in January.
There you go.
Interesting.
I just got to message him. Hey, what GPs you going
to? How much do I have to pay you for you to concede to me?
What? No, that's not happening.
In my private event. It doesn't even have to be a real Magic
event. I'm going
to
crush him.
You just come sit at a card store with me. I'll pay him $50.
So, when you watch the Pro Tour, what is something you're trying to learn or see? Casey and you guys are just copying each other. Casey and Michael, you guys just. I put what would Finkel do? And Casey, you said watch the greats and learn from how they see it.
Yeah.
So it's the same thing.
Exactly. Just learning. Trying to get into their heads, say, okay, in this situation, I would make this play, and then I see either if they make the same play or if they go a different way, and then I reevaluate, okay, is this significantly better, or is it just a different way of thinking? Is their way of thinking significantly better? Is it going to pay more dividends?
Owen Turnwald wasn't on screen enough for you this Pro Tour, I bet.
Yeah, that guy, or you, yeah. Both of them are just like, what just happened? How did you do that? Why did you do that?
Why have I never done that?
Exactly.
I agree. I like watching players who I know are better than me just make decisions and like see how they value cards and how they time things. And I think you can learn a lot from almost anyone can learn a lot from that. Just not
you have to be in the mindset to do it, though. That's one of the things that I want to say about this is, like, a long, long time ago in a galaxy far, far away on this podcast, I talked about how if you're watching the Pro Tour to correct players, you're not watching the Pro Tour to learn. But if you're watching the Pro Tour to question the players, you are watching the Pro Tour to learn.
And, I mean, that's not to say that the whole time I'm watching the Pro Tour, I'm sitting there with, like, a notepad studying either. It is just super entertaining to watch really good players play really sweet decks against each other. It's not like every second you're watching Magic has to feel like you're striving to become a better Magic player. It is okay to just take it in and enjoy it. But it's interesting when you get into sort of tenuous spots in a game to watch a player who you know, I mean, obviously understands their own deck better than you do, but is probably just much better at Magic than you are.
Yeah.
Just watch and think, okay, so I would lean towards this play, and then if they make it, you can pat yourself on the back a little bit, and if they don't, you can think, okay, so what am I missing?
Yeah, and when it's way off, when you're like, okay, I think that they need to try to, like, sack this archive in to draw cards and or whatever, and then they're like, attack with these things, and you're like, what? You're so far behind, but then, like, you see over the course of, like, five turns that, like, that extra damage really mattered.
They're almost always right. I mean, there's a reason that these guys are in, like, feature matches on the Pro Tour.
Yeah.
And it's not because they're less intelligent than you are. Right? I mean,
yeah. It's because they're luckier. We already know that. But
yeah, obviously, well, they're way better at drawing collected company. It's just not fair.
How can you have it both ways?
I'm joking.
I think that if there's one thing that I would take away from what you guys just said, it's kind of that same premise, right? You need to watch to learn. You need to watch to question, not watch to correct.
Yeah. And you need to be honest with yourself when you're doing it. If you see a great play or somebody tells you about a play or a concept and then you say, "Yeah, that's what I would have done."
Would you?
Don't.
Would you have done, is that when you would have, you know, activated your
Underworld connections?
No.
Because I wouldn't have.
I would have never occurred to do that.
I think often, though, the thing that's funniest about watching great players play Magic is it's not mostly about making these crazy next level plays. It's mostly about just, like, getting the mundane stuff right over and over and over and over again and sort of slowly maneuvering the game to where they want it to be. Because when you play against players who make mistakes or when you make mistakes yourself, they're almost always silly mistakes. Most of the mistakes you make aren't missing these absurd lines. They're like attacking with the wrong creatures because you did combat math wrong, or tapping the wrong lands, or changing what you're representing to give your opponent more information.
I think this is twofold, because I think that, one, I actually don't think the lines are silly. I think that they're blatantly obvious once you realize what they are.
Yeah, that's what he's saying. It's not like some insane thing that, like, you...
Right.
It's not usually something that you just weren't even on that wavelength.
It's usually just, when you make mistakes, they're
it's
just
death
dumb.
By a thousand paper cuts, is what he's saying. You're making a bunch of small errors.
Right, and it's not that any one mistake costs you the game. It's that you're losing a half a percentage point here, a half a percentage point there, and when you add together, you know, your slightly worse mulligan decisions, your slightly worse land sequencing, your slightly worse valuation of spells, maybe you get the wrong thing countered or kill the wrong creature with, and over time, these add up.
And the thing, the second fold that I want, it kind of all in the, I guess it all envelops into one thing, but, like, if you haven't played Legacy, you should go play a Brainstorm deck. And when you do it, you should have somebody who plays Brainstorm decks watch you play.
Yeah. And make sure that they have, like, a barf bucket, because it's hard to watch somebody play Brainstorm for the first time.
But if you remember, like, episode 2 that Manny was on, he talked about, I can't play Legacy, this is too hard. And it's as somebody who played with Jace the Mind Sculptor and never realized that I could put 2 Squadron Hawks back, play a Squadron Hawk, and draw those 2 Squadron Hawks, I feel so stupid. I won so many matches. I was the number 1 ranked player, the number 2 ranked player in Utah, and never realized that was a thing that I could do.
Yeah, that was, like, the best part of Squadron Hawk?
I mean, exactly. It never occurred to me that I could do something like that. And it's... Why does and when you look back on it, you're like, wow, I'm dumb.
It's easy to feel that way, right?
It is. And that's exactly, I think, what you're talking about, these minute things. These things that look, well, I should have known that.
Well, and sometimes you watch someone play a really masterful game and the end result is really beautiful. Like, I mean, I saw this a lot with various Westvale Abbey decks this weekend where they just slowly sort of lowered the clamps on their opponents from both sides to a point where there was just no way out. And if they'd been too quick to try to flip the Abbey, they would have probably just lost. But instead, you know, they were just really patient. They really valued their cards correctly. They valued each creature correctly. They just did a really good job of kind of evaluating what resources were going to win them the game. But it wasn't one great play. It was just over the course of the game making the slightly better play over and over and over again to where eventually it led to kind of an insurmountable advantage.
Yeah. Well, I mean, what is the John Finkel quote? Something like making the 51% decision the 11th time after it coming up 49, 10 times in a row, like just always making the right play, never giving up that percentage point ever.
Right. No, the idea that there is only one right play is something that this podcast was built upon. So I think that if you're watching the Pro Tour next time, kind of remember who you're watching. Remember why you're watching it, because you're not there and they are.
You don't even have to watch the next one. You can just go on Twitch and rewatch parts of this one. I mean, that's what I spent the last couple of days doing in my free time. Just
YouTube also has that.
Trying to soak up as much information as possible. Because, you know, when you play locally, not that players aren't good, but, you know, John Finkel is a high standard.
Right. He's not playing your FNM.
Right.
Basically ever.
Josh Erlein played our FNM.
That's true. And didn't he, like, 2-3 drop?
Ooh, daggers. So when I watch the PT, I love learning about formats in that context. The PT, the starting point is how much aggro to expect, and then you build from there. And that's an interesting starting point. It should be the starting point that everybody takes everywhere, but they don't. I'm not sure why. But yeah. At the Pro Tour, it's how much aggro do I expect? What can I afford to build with?
Right. What's in my range?
Right. And at SCGs and other and FNMs, people seem to forget that. And they're like, I'm going to build this sweet deck.
I wouldn't even say people forget that. I would say they never consider that. I mean, I think at lower levels, people just do what they want. And there's nothing wrong. Like, if you just want to play your FNM to play whatever deck you think is cool, that's a perfectly legitimate reason to play an FNM.
Oh, and we agree with that. I think that the people who listen and have listened for a while, I think that they have goals in mind in Magic. And whatever those goals are, they're fine.
Sure, I just mean I don't want to make fun of people who just play FNM. There's nothing wrong with just wanting to have fun.
Did you feel like I was making fun of people who play FNM?
No, I just wanted to separate those. Oh, because okay. I'm just trying to like make sure that it's clear that those are sort of two separate categories. And if your goal is really to win every event you play,
to have a winning record at, there's things that you have to take into... You have to... The event starts before you draw your first hand.
Exactly. Part of playing your best in an event is putting yourself in the best position possible by making deck building choices that give you a chance.
And that's the thing that I find interesting is like, what sacrifices did they make for aggro? What sacrifices did they not make for aggro? Like, what caused the deck building decisions to happen is what I like to see at the Pro Tour. And that's always interesting to me. So what do you think the deck will be that's the best next week? Michael, you won states with it, so you put down Green Black Aristocrats?
It just feels wrong to do as well as I did with the deck and not say that it's going to be great. I mean, it's hard to say coming off the Pro Tour weekend.
Do you not regret audibling off of Mono White Humans?
I mean, Mono White Humans is a good deck too, but I wanted to play the deck that I thought was sweeter. And it ended up being a good choice. It worked out for me.
Cool. Casey, what do you think the best deck will be?
I think it's hard to say anything other than green-white tokens. It's because it did have the highest win percentage. It did take down the tournament. It seems to have good matchups against most of the best decks. It just attacks from different angles that are hard to beat. I mean, that's kind of where you're trying to get with tokens decks in general. I think this one has the right tools to be
it ends up being a real problem. Sort of similar to the Aristocrats decks in the way a lot of the games actually play out, not in terms of specific cards, but just the same way you're able to sort of go wide and then apply pressure from a variety of angles. It's really good at forcing opponents into positions where almost no matter what they do, they're going to get blown out by something, right? It's either like Dromoka's Command or Avacyn or just Gideon Emblem minus Nissa. It's always something. Yeah.
Exactly. I mean, we've seen that kind of thing before. Secure the Wastes, untap, Gideon, Emblem, kill you.
Yep.
Oh, okay. Good games. Like, and it's... it's like playing against Splinter Twin, right? Like the Tarmogoyf Twin decks, where it's like, I can either take four a turn for five turns and die, or I can kill this Tarmogoyf and die. Those are my options. And
watching the top eight especially, it felt like that a lot. Like Ruben was just able to get the games to a place where he got to do what he wanted to do, and his opponents could deal with part of what he wanted to do, but not the second part, and then they would just die.
Right. There's just no like reasonable out to these types of decks sometimes.
Yeah, I mean, I think Secure the Waste has been underrepresented for a long time, so I'm glad to see it do something.
Yeah, I think I was just talking about that the last time I was on the show, 2 weeks ago or whatever, that like that card has actually just never done anything, even though it's basically great.
Yeah, I think you did. So the deck that I put down was actually Green Black Seasons Past. I think this deck will draw the best players and could create the best results because of it.
Yeah, it is sweet. I don't, the problem is like,
it's not only sweet, but it plays to the advantage that great players like to play with.
Yeah. My only concern about this deck is how great do you have to be to make this deck good? Because like some pretty good players that we know played it at States, right, and got laughed out of the room, crushed.
I mean, one good player that I know played it at States.
I thought that a few people.
I wouldn't exactly say crushed. I mean,
lost a win in for top 8.
Oh,
yeah,
okay.
It's the hard
win. I mean, I heard the story secondhand, so I already got crushed. But
it's a high standard.
No.
Oh, I was gonna say
he would tell that.
Alex would present that. Yeah. Oh yeah, I got crushed. I didn't win.
Yeah.
I didn't win the whole event. I got crushed.
Did you hear it from Matt?
Yeah.
I'm sure that's how Alex told it to him.
Yeah, for sure.
Alex got extremely unlucky against Gray for his first loss and then lost a winning in.
I see.
My bigger concern with that deck
that
is
happen.
The mirror match just seems unbelievably miserable.
What?
I say that as someone who...
I hope you go to hear Casey excited about that.
I say that as someone who thoroughly enjoys the Bant Company mirror match for what it's worth.
Yeah.
So
there are people
Maybe I'm just weird, but that mirror match looks almost uniquely miserable.
There's some people that really like creature mirrors and some people that really like control mirrors. I really like control mirrors. And like the Bant Company mirror, I would rather actually not play Magic than... I would rather file my taxes. I would rather stub my toe.
Luckily for you, it's April.
Yeah, that's true.
I think taxes were due already.
That's true.
I think
he
might have
gotten
in
an extension. He can get an extension.
He'll be starting
on his
early for next year.
Yeah, exactly. That seems impossible.
I mean, I've made some money. I can.
But yeah, I think that I would pick that deck just because of how it incorporates itself into the expected metagame and with the players that want to play that kind of deck.
Yeah, I mean,
with that being said,
it's. Oh, sorry. I mean, I do agree with the assessment because Seasons Past is so powerful that, like, as long as you can find cards that cost different amounts of mana that still form a cohesive control strategy, I think that, like, it could be viable.
I'm pretty interested to see different sorts of exact deck lists that shell shows up in. I mean, obviously, like, Reduke and those guys, the Pantheon, they're great, great builders and players, but sometimes I think having things out in public a little bit, you just get more ideas and sort of collective deck building can provide innovations that just limited eyes can't.
That was my exact thoughts, was that I'm excited to see where this deck goes.
Yeah, I was actually kind of surprised that it didn't play blue, like didn't play Jace or
that
anything.
That deck felt like it really wanted Jace. I also felt a couple of times like it might really want, like, this is kind of embarrassing, but like a Rise from the Tides, so you could actually kill someone quickly.
Yeah, it is kind of nice in a control deck to have like, okay, you're dead. We're done with this.
I mean, that being said, I don't actually suggest playing Rise from the Tides. I just wish
you
that
did.
It had a faster
way. You just
way
suggested
to...
it.
You implied it.
All right. With that being said, we'll end that on the Rise of the Tides comment. Card of the week. So we used to give this out earlier, but we want to give Patreon Tim C, the card of the week. We're going to actually give him Seasons Past. Times two of them. That's all that was played in the that deck.
It's all you need.
That's all you need, man. Just shoot us a message either on the Patreon, either on patreon.com, or shoot me a message, Spencer Howland. We're happy to ship you those out, man. You can become eligible for this reward by becoming a Patreon of $3 or more per month, and we'll hook a guy up.
Are you going to require a pledge to not play Rise from the Tides as well?
No, he can, if he wants, he can, Tim can do whatever he wants with these Seasons Past.
Yeah, he can get back, like, Suntail Hawk, Athalia, Amiran Crusader, and
I think they have to be spells, right?
Oh, is that
or
it
non-creature?
Is it non-creature?
I don't.
Is it any card?
I'd be surprised if a green card advantage spell was non-creature.
It's just cards.
That's great.
Yeah.
Go you.
You can get back a Squadron Hawk to set up your
Hero of Bladehold. Right. That's it's a combo deck.
You actually cannot play Hero of Bladehold with your Seasons Past. I forbid it. Yeah. Overall, I think that what we learned from this Pro Tour is that it's sweet. Magic is sweet again, guys. I was worried at the first week. I know Michael said he was worried 5 days ago. It's sweet, guys. And, when you're watching an event like this, when you're watching great players, watch them to learn. Like, there's so much you can do to improve all the time, and you're not going to do it if you're not in the mindset to do it. So, clan. Don't forget each other clan on MTGO at, just by messaging me at Spencer13Dev. You can also message Quentin at Earthstripe. That's
Earthstripe. That guy.
Apparently it's a name from a character in a book. Don't forget to share the sponsor at Oasis Games. That's mtgoasis.com and oasisccg.com. Don't forget that you can support the podcast directly by going to patreon.com/ccmtg. Casey, where can people find you?
You can find me on Facebook at Casey Tuna Bloodworth or on Twitter at CC Bloodthirst.
Michael, where can people find you?
You can find me on Facebook in the Facebook group at Michael Hinderacher. That's Hinderacher.
Oh, they can't add you as a friend?
You can. I mean, you are welcome to add me as a friend. I certainly need more friends in the world. Or on Twitter at mhindy. That's MH1NDY.
You can find me on Facebook at Spencer Stephen Howland. You can also find me in the Facebook group. You can find me on Twitter at Spencer13H. And you can find the show every week on ConstructedCriticism.com, MTGCast.com. I was about to say MTGOasis.com. At various podcasting apps. If you listen to this podcast in an inconvenient way, tell us how it would be easier for you, and we'll try and make it happen for you. Don't forget to join the Constructive Criticism Facebook group. We actually got a question. Is that only for Patreons this week? It is definitely not. Everyone who is a listener of the show can join the Facebook group. Just search Constructive Criticism Facebook group on Facebook, and we'd be happy to add you. It's amazing. I love it. Hashtag would that be good? Hashtag would that be good is our Twitter outreach program. Every week on the show, we read all of the tweets from last week for hashtag would that be good and talk about them on the show. What day is it? It's the 25th, so we go back to
it'd be like the 17th, right? Because we record on Sundays, but today's Monday.
Okay, so just kidding, commune with lava as a one of in standard, you are goggles, hashtag would be good. No, don't play commune with lava.
Don't do it. It's tempting. I understand. You see it, you read the card, it looks like it does something, but it doesn't. Don't play it.
Don't do it. It's a trap. It's chirp.
It's a tarp.
It's tarp.
I'm pretty sure you just don't want to play commune with lava.
But I appreciate you for having ideas.
Yeah. Keep thinking.
Wait, so I don't understand. What's the point with goggles?
Because then
you can only still play one of those lands, right?
You get twice as many cards.
But
yeah, I mean, it. I don't know.
Does that help?
I mean, would you rather draw more cards or less cards?
Fall of the Titans.
Yeah, I think that you could just be doing more with the mana is really the issue. I think that,
and also there is a deck building cost. It's 1/60th of your deck, right? It's a one of,
at least one of, and it is just, I don't know. It's kind of sketchy.
Yeah, I mean, I assume the idea is that you're probably playing on your opponent's end step, right? And getting like just a million cards.
How much mana do you have with goggles?
Well,
in this deck.
Well, let's say you.
So maybe in like the green red deck, you might be able to do it. But even that deck plays like such expensive spells, and like you're using so much of your mana.
I would rather just play another Ulamog.
That's the problem is with goggles or with not with goggles with commune is that like the
I feel like
when you get to that much mana, you just have big huge things, so you just don't get to draw enough cards.
Well, or it's going to be a really expensive like anticipate,
right?
Like look at the top 7 cards, play one of them for 9 mana, just sort of underwhelming.
A little bit.
You're probably going to want to play the most expensive one, right? I mean, if you like flip a Dragonlord of Tarka and it's going to be reasonable, you're probably casting it.
went 4-0 with my dumb Teemer Walkers deck in the GPT yesterday. Hashtag the good, then drew into top 8. Obviously, if you're playing Teemer, it's good. That's the end of the story. But it gets better. We'll get back to you later, Michael. Is it ethical to tilt my opponent before match by saying, "Suh, dude"? And if I know, is it logical not to? What?
So I saw this on Twitter. And so I think that, in general, trying to win by doing something other than playing Magic is unethical.
So have you heard the best story that Tom Martell has ever told?
No.
Apparently, I don't know the name of this pro player, but he was friends with Mike Long. But his game was Mind Games. So he's in a feature match of a pro tour.
Like Aaron Morinaga?
Yeah,
or even like higher level than that.
So they're in the feature match of the pro tour. And they're rolling dice to see who goes first, right? And he throws the dice as high as he can in the air. And then he goes, 1 second. He runs and goes and gets them, comes back to the table and goes, "I rolled an 8," and hands him the dice.
What?
Go ahead and roll. What would you do?
I would tell him he has to re-roll.
Judge!
Yeah.
But how would you feel for the rest of the match?
Like, this dude was a jackass?
I would
jackass?
Be pissed if I lost. I would be pissed.
You could not play Magic for the rest of the day.
No, but he might not be able to either after I kicked him so hard under the table.
So, I don't know if that stuff is appropriate, but man, the story's great.
I think I
don't know that sub dude. To be fair,
so like if
hold
you
on,
specifically, I think
time
in this
out.
Example, he specifically knows the person and knows that it will upset them.
So Casey, is this actually any different from me handing you mono white with a game day playmat and penny sleeves?
I think so, because that was us trying to make our friends laugh, not trying to like specifically tilt the people I was playing against, right?
But do you think they were tilted when they lost?
I mean, maybe, but that was after I'd already beaten them, right? I wasn't playing that deck with the hopes that it would tilt them so that I could beat them.
Okay.
See, I think we should all buy playmats and then play with them upside down, like flipped over so you're playing on the black rubber side and then just act really confused. I think that I would find that tilting personally.
Now, the most tilting thing I've ever seen,
oh my
as far
gosh.
As that goes.
So Michael and I are playing, and he
was
goes,
a McDonald's fast food tray. He was using that as a playmat.
No, he wasn't.
Yeah.
That is awesome.
So, what?
Yeah.
Michael and I are playing, and he turns, somebody talks about the playmat is sweet, and Michael says, "You get a top 8 for top, you get a playmat for top 8 states? I need a new playmat, I lost mine." Alex looks over to me and goes, "That's what you care about? That's your goal here."
Well, no, my real goal was to get the medal.
He goes, "Well, I'm not going to buy a new playmat, I need to win one."
Yeah, I agree. I've never bought a playmat. I would. It would be insane.
Well, I bought a playmat right when I started playing, and it was just plain white. I'm very distressed that I've lost it because I really enjoyed the questions I would get about it. Are you going to draw in that? Why does it look dirty? Why is it? I don't know, because I just bought a white playmat.
Red-white tokens with Gideon Nahiri, Hangerback Walker, Pink Cairn, Declaration, Dragon Fodder, Oath of Gideon, Westfell Secure. Hashtag that would be good. Cody, so I've talked to Cody about this a little bit. I think that, like, I do think that there is room in the format for tokens decks. And I think that what Green White did shows that. And I think that there is room to explore. I don't like Dragon Fodder. I understand that Cody says it's been really good for him. So I could be wrong.
Yeah. Maybe the answer is Naya, right? Maybe the answer lies somewhere between. Who knows?
I'm a little ambivalent about Naya, just given that you're probably trying to play Nissa, Pia, and Kieran, and Gideon the same deck. But, I mean, I think sort of there's already proof of concept, so
right.
You might be making it worse in some ways, but maybe it works better for you, or maybe you like it better. Or,
but I think if you're going to test an idea like this, you have to be honest with yourself, though, is what's important. Am I playing this because it's different or because it's better?
Sure.
Thank goodness for Twitter, Workshop Killing Me Slowly, PTSOI Keeping Me Alive, hashtag Twitter Life Support, hashtag Would That Be Good. Man, that PT was great, man. I don't know what to tell you. It was the greatest.
No, so was it Mishra's workshop, or was it like a workshop?
I think it was a workshop.
That's like
he
a
was
workshop,
in.
Workshop.
Yeah.
Although,
those are the worst.
Mishra's workshop could definitely...
Oh, yeah, it's the slowest kill. Yeah.
Not really. It's turn one, play something. You don't get to play Magic anymore.
Right. And then you just sit there and die for an hour.
Hey, you're already dead. You're mostly just a corpse at the table.
One Alberta Standard SCG Provincials. Hashtag MTG. Hashtag SOI. Hashtag would that be good. Hashtag rug life.
I just want to note that once again, we're seeing a picture of someone with the medal around their neck. But
and it might be the only picture.
I was going to say, I'm pretty sure they were forced to take this picture.
Move over, Spencer13H. There's a new state champion on the podcast, and his name is M. Hindi. Congratulations, man.
Thanks. I really appreciate it. I was really surprised to win. That sounds kind of weird.
Shut up.
But I was. Like, I didn't think the deck was that good. Like, I barely audibled onto it that
morning.
Casey,
I appreciate your eye rolls.
And Casey was, like, we were both sort of like, I actually don't know that this is better than Mono White, but
I'm doing it
anyways.
Take both, look at the room, and make a
I didn't
follow your gut.
I just brought green black. I titled it bad, and then it was really good, so it was a reverse psychology trick.
Yeah,
it was great.
Well, let's move on to Eggbeat, who says, being able to order a beer at McDonald's. Hashtag with the good. Hashtag PTSOI. So dude was in
Spain.
That's
why I scrubbed
out.
Hold
on. Eggbeat was, he was at the Pro Tour.
Yeah. Quentin was running up the score bragging about that too when he got back from Belgium too.
I don't even know what, they had great cider they had really great cider in.
Hashtag would that be good for my liver? No. Hashtag would that be good for my wallet?
What
no.
kind of beer could you possibly
hashtag
be
you're already
McDonald's?
In McDonald's? So what about that?
That's what I was just thinking. Thank you everybody for listening this week. I hope that you all enjoyed the Pro Tour in this sweet format, and I hope that you all love Magic as much as I do because it's great. So see you guys all next week.
See you around.
See you even later than Casey. Magic.